This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer.
You're listening to the UAV Digest, episode 282. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Fort Washington, Pennsylvania. Okay, well, I'm not Max Flight. Max is down in Sun and Fun this week having a grand old time, and he left me carrying the can for this week's episode. However, we had a volunteer show up. I'd like to introduce you to Heather Zoltek, our new executive producer of wildlife. Heather, welcome to the UAV Digest and the team.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So let's, Heather, talk a little bit about you. How did you get interested in drones and UAVs?
Well, honestly, my initial interest wasn't in drones or UAVs, but it kept becoming a reoccurring theme and things I was interested in, like animals and social media and my son being an engineer. Stories I saw on Twitter and read online would credit drones for either like the footage or collecting data. Social media, there seemed to be there for a while. A million people who were in their backyards putting a GoPro on their drone and putting it up in the air. So things like that on YouTube and Facebook piqued my interest. My son, for a while, he thought he was going to be an engineer and was heavily into robotics. And a big part of robotics for a while there was UAVs and drones. But my biggest interest came after meeting you and Max and seeing the large community that's out there. As you know, I started sending you Twitter stories and Facebook stories that had a wildlife theme to keep myself in the loop. And to my surprise, you guys really liked them and ran with them. And here I am.
Okay, Heather, now that you've done that, what have you learned about drones listening to the show for the last year?
Well, from listening, there's so much. It could be its own episode. The big thing is the variety of uses for drones and UAVs. Until hearing your show, I thought anyone who was interested in them flew them in their backyards for fun. Now I see how many industries, companies, places like Amazon, the military, law enforcement, all use them in their day-to-day. And now I start to pay more attention. It's kind of like those things that once they're on your radar, you see them everywhere.
Yes, people, forgive the pun, it's on her radar. One of the things that you love best about and you have a fascination with is wildlife conservation. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, wildlife conservation has been something I'm always passionate about since I was little. Growing up, my little sister loved polar bears. I loved elephants, tigers, and they all seemed to be animals that were classified in that could be extinct in my lifetime situation. So I learned at an early age that these things might not be here within my lifetime. Once I had kids and started taking them to zoos and circuses, I understood on a high level how inhumane most of the animal treatment was, and that made me more aware. My family personally has sponsored two elephants. They're now out of the circus and in an elephant sanctuary in Tennessee, as well as a giraffe that was moved from a local zoo, and two wolves that are at a current wolf sanctuary. Thankfully, in the past few years, the circus is now animal-free, and places like SeaWorld are getting tremendous scrutiny for their treatment, or should I say lack thereof treatment, of their animals, and hopefully in my lifetime, they'll be gone as well.
So, anything else you want to say, or should we get started?
Nope, I think we can start the show.
All right, let's get started.
So our first story is from UASmagazine.com. Drones will gather data for tornado research projects. So apparently the National Science Foundation is giving $2.5 million beginning May 15th to go over 367,000 square mile area, which is from Texas to North Dakota. The program is known as TORUS, Targeted Observation by Radars and UAS of Supercells.
And of course, never let it be said that we don't go out of our way for an acronym, TORUS being the shape of what a tornado is. But we're dealing really with supercells, not necessarily flying aircraft into tornadoes. We're flying them into the weather patterns that create the tornadoes. So unfortunately, Heather, your analogy about a certain movie.
So it's not like Twister at all.
They're not flying actually into the aircraft into the. So no, there won't be no flying cows that will maybe possibly hit by drones.
What about trucks?
Maybe trucks, we'll see. But the program is going to cooperate with NOAA, or, of course, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Association, and the four UASs to fly and relay data to a P3, which is owned by NOAA. And this will make Heather surprised. NOAA has two P3s, and their names are Kermit and Miss Piggy. So they will radar. They'll radar the telemetry to either Kermit or Miss Piggy, and that information will be sent to the University of Nebraska, which will be doing the data processing. And quote, it's to understand how tornadoes are formed, we need to understand their parent storms called supercells, said Chang Liu, a program director in the NSF Division of Atmospheric and Geospace Sciences. So this is something probably, Heather, you wouldn't have expected, that we would be flying drones into tornadoes or supercells.
Well, maybe. I mean, in Twister, they used soda cans and just cut them up. So, I mean, if they can do it with soda cans, I'm sure that the NSF has much bigger plans.
Yes, we've boiled it down to Coke and Pepsi. So what's our next story, Heather?
Well, just in time for the 75th anniversary of D-Day, which I know is very special to you, from News Rep, the Marines test plywood drones for disposable resupply. Now, I thought this was so cute because it reminds me of when my son was little and he would make those little planes out of wood and just swing them across the living room.
Balsa wood gliders.
Correct. But this seems like it's on a much, much bigger scale. Because it's, 10.4 feet long with 23-foot wingspans from plywood and aluminum. And it can carry 700 pounds of cargo. So it's pretty much an upgrade of what flew across my living room when my son was little.
Actually, it's a substantially upgrade of the gliders that they used on D-Day. If you don't know, one of the ways that they landed people and paratroopers in D-Day was by glider towed by DC-3, and those were disposable. They were fabric, aluminum, and balsa wood. So here we are, 75 years later, we're going back to the same thing, but in this case, we're pushing the aircraft out of a large transport like a C-130. And it will glide via first-person view or radio control. And the other way it can be launched, which was very interesting, is it can be sling-loaded by helicopter, meaning that it can be carried underneath the helicopter by rope. And as it gets to the target, they will let it go. Usually the Marines sling-load their Humvees and their artillery by helicopter, by Sea Stallion or Super Stallion. In this case, the drone will be it. So, Heather, this is our video of the week, and you get to see a lot of ways that this little glider lands. And the nice thing about it is it's going to be probably a one and done. I don't think in a hostile environment it's a great way to resupply, but not necessarily with the expectation to be used again. So it's cheap and disposable. Where in a world where we talk about recycling all the time and wildlife management, this is where we're here, cheap and disposable.
But the real question is, are the wings going to fold up?
The wings do fold up, as a matter of fact. The wings fold. They do not fold up, Heather. They fold out, meaning that when it's pushed out of the back of the aircraft, they're flush against the fuselage, and then they pop out to act as wings. So it's not like your bendy foldy wings that you're so fond of with Corsairs, but they do fold. So yes, you've got that one on target.
And for the helicopter, it's like a slingshot underneath.
Not necessarily a slingshot, more like just letting it go. Like you would see someone with a bucket of water hanging from a helicopter. They just let it go and it drops. So they're not slingshotting it. It's just dropping it from altitude and then it would fly to ground. So what do we got next?
All right. So our next story is UAS LIDAR for ecological restoration of the wetlands. So a bog in France is the subject of this restoration project. And I hadn't heard about bogs since I read The Hounds of Baskerville when I was in high school. But apparently France has a bog.
France has lots of bogs. Most of Europe has lots of bogs. But this is, in essence, they're looking for a digital terrain model, or what we call a DTM. The area was required to understand hydromorphology of the bog for the project. It was a multi-rotor with LIDAR used. It's a muddy environment with dense vegetation, which makes the LIDAR be able to see, of course, with the bog and the peat, they want to see what the water is underneath it. So the LIDAR is able to see by the quadcopter to see underneath the peat and the moss to see how the water is flowing underneath it.
So how does it do that?
It's like radar. It sends a signal to the ground and sends it back, and then it interprets what it sees. So you can see things with radar, and you can see things with infrared, and you can see things with LIDAR that you wouldn't see with the visible eye because they're different
spectrum. Because it's hidden by.
Yeah. So like you just said, LIDAR can penetrate the vegetation canopy and measure the ground that photogrammetry cannot. That's one of those words that Max and I always screw up, Heather.
What is that?
Photogrammetry is using photography. It's using photo. The team used a Yellowscan Surveyor LIDAR UAV, which is ultra lightweight, a fixed wing, and has a standalone self-powered mapping system. It's also quick and easy to operate. So there, again, we're talking about drones using, not necessarily, it doesn't matter what the drone is, but more importantly, what the sensors are that it's carrying, and the ability to see things quickly and rapidly where you wouldn't see it normally if you were trying to observe it from the ground or just using video with your eyes. So the next story I know was going to be near to dear to Heather's heart. Heather, you want to take it away?
From space.com, ready for the red planet. NASA's Mars helicopter ACE-KEY fly test. So apparently the Mars rover is getting a friend. The poor Mars rover, as we've all been seeing on Twitter, sent its last goodbye, tear your heart out, end the notebook kind of message out. Personally, myself, I've always felt so horrible for the Mars rover being up there alone. On a side note, as long as David and I have been friends, whenever we're together, he gets what I believe are messages from the Mars rover because his phone will always go off and make this noise that I can only imagine is the Mars rover trying to connect. But yeah, so the friend of the Mars rover will be flown to Mars in July of 2020 on a 4-pound helicopter, which was first flew in July of 2019.
Well, flown on the next Mars rover in 2020 will be a 4-pound helicopter or a little bit of a quadcopter that first flew in Martian conditions in last January. The copter flew with the, quote, space simulator, a 25-foot vacuum chamber at Jet Propulsion Laboratory. A tether was used to pull the aircraft up to simulate the 60% less gravity of Mars, which is very interesting because it was flown tethered, but it was given a little help from its friends. So this quadcopter can successfully fly in Earth's atmosphere and Earth's gravity. But in this case, the lack of atmosphere and the lack of gravity in Mars, it was given a little help for some additional lift. So the quote is,
"The gravity offload system performed perfectly, just like our helicopter," said the Mars helicopter test conductor Teddy Zanalos, also of JAPL. "We only required a 2-inch 5 centimeters hover to obtain all the data sets needed to confirm that our Mars helicopter flies autonomously as designed in a thin Mars-like atmosphere. There was no need to go higher. It was a heck of a first flight. So I'm picturing when Wally gets to be with Eve for the first time is when the Mars rover gets his friends.
Well, in all fairness, this is going with another Mars rover. So there's going to be a buddy team up there now, not necessarily. So the helicopter will fly off the back of the new Mars rover that's replacing Opportunity.
Okay.
It's going to be eyes so they can go a little bit further downrange. Consider it R2-D2 and C-3PO working together. So let's have another conversation. Heather, one of the things that we've talked about on UAV Digest is women in drones and women in STEM. Now, one of the people who is dying to hear this show happens to be your daughter who wants to go into sciences as a veterinarian. Tell us a little bit more about what your thoughts are in women in science and in general and talking about drones. And I know that you've heard Max and I talk about how we as a new industry have the ability to get ahead of the curve and bring more women in early. So what's it feel like to have a daughter who wants to go into science?
Really proud. I'm very proud of her. You know, being a woman out in the workforce myself, I understand the struggle that we've had till now. So it's really exciting to me to know that she will embark on her studies and her career with hopefully more of an open mind, that women are equal in regards to, you know, intelligence, workforce, salary. But yeah, she wants to go into biology and work with wildlife and animals. So STEM has been a big push in the last 5 or 10 years I've seen in schools, which makes me really happy. You know, growing up, you want to know that, you know, wherever you go or whatever you want to get into is open to you. And I feel that they are encouraging and pushing more girls down that career path. So with drones becoming, you know, a new thing, a new industry, I'm hoping that from the get-go, women and men are just equal and can work at the same pace and hold the same level jobs. And it doesn't have to be an industry that's kind of on their archaic side like we have now in some of them.
And what do you think? What do you think about women in drones?
Well, it would only make sense that if we are going to have an influx of women interested in science and math and engineering, that the next logical step would be drones. So I'm hoping 5 years from now, if we're still friends and we have a conversation again, that it's not a topic because it's just something that is day to day and accepted.
Well, Max and I will keep pushing women in aviation and women in drones. So we got a little business follow-up to do. I'm sparing Heather from this because this has been around for a while. This week, the CAA in New Zealand broadcast that Rod Vaughan was determined to have a failure of a windscreen, and that was not due to a drone strike. If you go back in time, you remember that there was a big deal that Mr. Vaughan had an accident on final and his windshield was shattered and he had cuts and scrapes on his face, etc. However, after investigation, the Civil Aircraft Authority of New Zealand determined that there was no drone strike. It was just a complete failure of Mr. Rod's windscreen causing the shatter on final. So again, what was pretended to be a drone strike, it wasn't. I also wanted to follow up. We got asked about the Aeromexico incident that occurred in December of 2018. And likewise, that has fallen to the wayside. I was curious about it because it seemed like it had fallen from the wayside because the week after we started having the incidents over London and over Gatwick and Heathrow. But evidently, there was no conclusive evidence that the Air Mexico 737 had a drone strike. So it was some other strike. I didn't hear that there was actually any birds or feathers, etc. But something did hit the aircraft because that was a sizable hole. But again, it doesn't seem conclusive that it was a UAS. So what else would you like to talk about before we leave tonight?
Well, we have to do a wildlife story since that's what got me in the door here and got me as the special guest host tonight. So from iflscience.com, the wildlife story of the week, Plants and Animals, a guide to use drones to study wildlife first and do no harm. So essentially what's going on there is they are going to be putting devices on elephant seals as they go through the ocean so they can get the lay of the land and areas that need concentrated on. But on in the grant up in the air, it's going to be birds and zebras. So the big push is, and the big reason with wildlife conservation is drones do the least harm. So they are not, you know, nobody has to trek through any terrain. Nobody has to disrupt any of the animals in their natural inhabitants. You know, as prior stories you guys have done, some of the animals are getting used to having them there. So it's just basically seems like very good news because we will be able to get into areas that nobody was able to go to before and hopefully keep them going and keep them preserved so we have them, you know, going well into the future.
But the article does also say that there should be a modicum of sensibility involved. Do no harm is basically the oath that if for some reason you using UASs or drones are harming the animals, they're changing their behaviors because of the aircraft, or you're detecting increasing heart rates, et cetera, something like that, you might need to rethink the solution. So it's keeping, I guess, Heather, we'd say we keep an open mind and make sure that the solution isn't becoming even more of a problem. I mean, we have seen whales out in the Pacific get spooked and startled by drones because people weren't flying them properly and getting amazing drone footage, but we don't want, you know, we don't want endangered species to get spooked by drones. So do no harm is a really good method.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, as much research and as much knowledge as can be gained from it, you never want to put the animals at any kind of harm or risk. So as much as we want them to accept us because we're doing good for them, you know, their best interest is above all else.
So should we wrap this one up and call it done?
I guess so. This was really fun.
Well, you've been listening to UAV Digest number 282. If you want direct to our show notes, you can do that by going to theuavdigest.com/282. Find us, including Heather, on our Slack listener team. Please join us there. You can do that by sending us a email to feedback@theuavdigest.com. And we'll send you a link to join the fun in our private little club called our Slack listener team. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/UAVDigest. You can find us on Twitter at twitter.com/UAVDigest. And of course, if you are listening on any of your podcast catchers, please leave some feedback so that other people can find us. Likewise, if you want to purchase some swag and get that UAV Digest sweater or jacket or hat or baseball cap, you can do that at our Cafe Press store. And of course, all of those can be found at www.theuavdigest.com. So without further ado, I'm going to say this is David in Fort Washington.
And Heather in Bucks County.
Thanks for listening.